At Fiddleheads, it's Chip Off the Record. At the Corner Store Co-op, it's Winter Lull and the Mead Owls. And at Matty T's Roadhouse, it's Southbound. If you're a local venue, band, or promoter, and you want to get your gigs listed on the concert billboard, send an email to Scene, that's S-C-E-N-E, at WUSB.FM. And as always, thanks for listening to the concert billboard right here on WUSB Stony Brook.
Where the time is 2 minutes after 6 o'clock, time for Off the Wall. And good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Manuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, as we're here just about every Tuesday evening, reflecting on the world at large and what's been going on in personal lives and globally and interplanetarily sometimes. And we welcome your phone calls. Phone number 631-632-WUSB. And of course, your cards and letters, well, electronic anyway, otw@2600.com. And yeah, late breaking news. I just saw this on the old teletype here, which actually is a webpage. House of Representatives has passed a resolution criticizing Joe Wilson. Joe Wilson, this is somebody that I didn't even know existed last week. Oh, I lived in innocence and bliss. Did not even have any inkling that this redneck fool, well, I mean, I knew there were people like him. I just didn't know that this particular jerk would stand up and make a fool of himself and be applauded for it by so many. It's so sad. It really is. We talked about this last week. We talked about how there's so much hatred out there and so much resentment and all kinds of false reports being thrown around. People being led to panic for all kinds of crazy reasons, mostly at the behest of radio talk show hosts. Yeah, well, you know, we don't lead you into panic, I don't think, do we? Let me know if we ever do that. But certain radio talk show hosts are doing that. They have no problem telling people falsehoods and getting them to react and believe things like President Obama is not a citizen, that he's a terrorist, that he's a Muslim, that he's... I'm not equating the two, but this is, it's just an example of the falsehoods, the easily provable falsehoods that get spread around, and people start to believe this. And the latest healthcare debate is chock full of things like that, and we went over some of them last week. But Wednesday was the day of the speech. Wednesday, Obama gave a speech intended to pretty much lay all the cards on the table and explain things and, I guess, push this thing a little bit harder so that it actually happens in our lifetime, hopefully in his candidacy, in his one of his terms, assuming there's a second term. And I expected the usual ignorance. I didn't expect somebody to actually be disruptive inside the joint session of Congress. I mean, I heard about this. I was in New York, and somebody tweeted about it. Yes, this is how I hear about things now, too. I know, it's pathetic. Somebody tweeted that there was a disruption at the presidential address. I couldn't believe it. That somebody actually inside a House of Congress would do this. At first, I thought it was some kind of a spectator. You know, you'd expect something from somebody that isn't part of the government. Expect emotions to maybe run high, misinformation to fly. But no, this was an actual representative, an elected official, screaming out, "You lie," to the president in the middle. Nothing like this has ever happened before in the history of our country. Oh yeah, people have hissed and booed and made all kinds of not too happy sounds, but nobody has ever actually shouted to the president of the United States that they were a liar inside a joint session. I mean, it's just, it's incredible. I don't think people realize the gravity of this. We went through 8 years of George W. Bush and nobody did that. So that should tell you right now that it's a first. Because if you ever had enough opportunities to call somebody a liar to their face, that was it. But there are just certain things you don't do. I mean, it's called respect. You have to have that respect. And much as I disliked some of the leaders we've had over the past however many years, you still have to maintain some degree of respect. Am I right? I mean, this is something I differ with a lot of people about. You know, where people just believe in being disruptive and shouting people down and things like that. I want to hear what people have to say and then tear them apart based on what they say. Not prevent them from speaking in the first place. Not make it so that it's so confrontational and uncomfortable that nobody wants to be there. I'd rather have an open dialogue and a debate, too, where people are in each other's faces and things like that. But in the case of an actual address by one person to a number of people, you let the person speak. And you rip them apart afterwards if you are so compelled to do so. But no, that's gone out the window now. With all the disruptions of town hall meetings and all the shouting down of people by the right wing and all the rudeness and the falsehoods and the utter lies and the fear-mongering tactics that are all over the place now. The hatred, the racism, obviously doesn't apply to everybody. There are people there that are doing this right, that are debating the issues and disagreeing and being civil about it and being intelligent about it. Yes, we're not talking about those people. We're talking about the loudmouth, ignorant idiots. And unfortunately, if you watch the news and read the newspapers, those are the people that you hear about. The Joe Wilsons, the Kanye West, the Serena Williams, I'm going to bring them all into this. Because this has been a week of loudmouth idiots. People don't know when to shut up. And behave as if they were in civilization, you know? would be a nice change. Well, okay, so what just happened here today, this afternoon, the House of Representatives has formally admonished Republican Representative Joe Wilson for shouting "you lie" during President Obama's speech. The House passed a resolution of disapproval on a 240-179 vote that was mostly along party lines. Now, it's interesting because at first, all the Republicans also condemned this guy. Now they're all standing up for him. Now they're all saying, oh, this is a waste of time. This is not necessary. Well, if it's a waste of time and not necessary, and you really believe the guy was wrong, why not just let's get this over with quickly rather than debate it all day long? During today's debate, Wilson himself called the measure a waste of time and failed to offer an apology to the chamber as demanded by House Democrats. Now, what's interesting about that, and you have to go back to Thursday's news to really look into this and see what's significant here. The guy shouts out, and it's not immediately clear who it is that did that. And the whole rest of the speech goes by, and he doesn't come forward, but he is eventually identified. And the news reports that we've pretty much been hearing is that he apologized. He called the White House and apologized, I believe, to Rahm Emanuel. And that seemed like a good first step, you know, to realizing that he did something really stupid. But listen to the way this was phrased in his statement on Thursday, the day after the speech. Well, I last night heard from the leadership that they wanted me to contact the White House and state that my statements were inappropriate, and I did. I am grateful the White House indicated they appreciated the call and that we needed a civil discussion, and I agree with that. And then he went on to why he disagreed with Obama and why he still believes Obama was lying. Okay. Regardless about that, listen to the way he said that. He didn't say, I realized I was wrong, and I wanted to apologize for what I did. Because he didn't realize this. He was told by the leadership to do this. He was told to get his ass on that telephone right now and call the White House and apologize. And you will do it. Oh, yes, you will. And that's what he was told. That's how the conversation went. So this was not something that came from him. He did not believe he should apologize the first time either. So it's hardly surprising that he refused to apologize even to his fellow congressman. Nothing surprising there. He said that... let's see, where's that story here? Well, basically he said that there was no other apology forthcoming. That was it. And now it's time to move on. Well, you know, it's not really time to move on exactly. You gotta sort of look at where we are, where we stand, where these people that we supposedly elect are actually coming from. Okay, here's the quote. I'm not going to apologize again, he said on Sunday, on Fox News, of course. He said he already apologized to Obama and that the president accepted it. Well, you can put that in quotes, I suppose. He sort of apologized. He was ordered to apologize, and he did it indirectly. He insisted, however, that Obama was misstating the facts and that Democratic leaders in the House were playing politics by continuing to focus on the issue. Yeah, now here's where it also gets interesting. He raised a whole lot of money after this. He raised, what, over $1 million? I mean, his opponent raised money too, but wow, this is incredible. People actually stood up for him in his district. Susan Wall from South Carolina, Swansea, South Carolina, in fact, said, yeah, it was rude, but somebody needed to say it. Ordinary people can't just get up and tell Obama he lied. He said something we all wanted to say. You know what's incredible about this? If you actually look into the facts a little bit, what was he talking about? He was talking about how the proposed health care bill was not going to allow for illegal aliens to benefit, or something along those lines. As if this is the most important thing that we have to worry about right now, is illegal aliens. Why must we inject illegal aliens into everything? You know, it's we have this obsession. This is a health care bill for American citizens. Now, if illegal aliens are somehow benefiting from that, well, that's a problem, I suppose, but that must be dealt with in some other way. It's not a problem with the actual bill itself. And the reason it's not a problem with the actual bill itself is because currently illegal aliens can benefit from all kinds of health care issues that exist now. So nothing new is being introduced that would make it any easier for them to benefit. So apparently the only way that these people can be satisfied is if somehow anything that Obama proposes has to somehow make it more difficult for illegal aliens to get anything. So everything has to be sort of an attack on illegal aliens or it's no good. It boggles my mind because these issues I don't think are even related. And personally, I think if somebody gets hurt or gets sick in a particular place, you take care of them and you ask questions later. You ask questions about what their criminal status, what their citizenry status is. You sort all that out later. The important thing at first is to take care of people. And then they'll be in a position to answer questions later, if they're relevant. Anyway, so this guy's district pretty much is standing up for him. Mendel Lindler in Lexington says, "I kind of want to defend Representative Wilson. The president has been trying to shove something down our throats, and Representative Wilson said, 'Hold on here.' Well, he didn't really say that, did he? Yeah." And more comments like that. Those are some of the more guarded comments. Some of the other comments I can't even read on the air about how these people feel about Obama. And it's incredible, too, because I really wonder what it is they are so afraid of. Oh, yeah, they all believe that we're moving into socialism because they've been told that by Fox News and everybody else, that somehow this equates to socialism. Yeah. And again, I've said that socialism itself is not the hell that people seem to think it is if done properly, but that's not even an issue here because that's not what this is. But it's a word that people fixate on and panic about. So you have something that makes sense. Having a healthcare system similar or at least in a step in the same direction as the rest of the civilized world, and we're reacting against it. We're panicking about it. It's so hard to get my head around this. And the thing that really bothers me more than anything is that because these people speak so loudly and are so offensive and get so much attention, we actually give them more importance than they are worth. And we believe that they are more of a force than they actually are. Now, there are a lot of them. There are a lot of people like this. And there's a lot of ignorance out there. But it's by no means the driving force of this country. But it will be if we tell ourselves that these people are important, that they matter, that they're going to win. Because then we'll be all defeatist. Then we'll say, oh, you know, it doesn't matter if we vote. It doesn't matter if we try to make change because, well, we're just never going to get anywhere. And obviously we can get places if we knock our heads together and actually do some work. Educate people. Get word out. And celebrate victories. Let's not tell ourselves constantly that everything is miserable and it's all just the same. It may not be perfect. It may not be exactly what we want, but if you're moving in the right direction, you're still moving in the right direction, however fast you might be going. So, you know, this is how I see the left constantly defeating itself. And I realize even by saying the left, that's another one of those alarm words. Well, yeah, you know what? Pretty much anything is the left at this point compared to what we've had. So, I really hope that this doesn't continue to become the dominant force in the news. Right now it is. And, of course, you also have the whole racial aspect. And people have to be careful about this as well because, yeah, there is racism out there. There's all kinds of hatred and ultra-nationalism and things like that. And that's driving lots of debates. But it's not everywhere. It's not everybody. And if we're too quick to point fingers and say this is happening because of racial issues, it turns off a lot more people. people who would be on your side normally. This is a problem that Governor Patterson has in accusing people of being racist if they criticize him. I think he accused people of being racist because they made fun of him being blind. I don't understand how that happened. But the thing is, people then react about that. They say this is ridiculous. This is not where people are coming from. And in fact, there are lots of people that are coming from that direction, but not everybody, not even the majority, I would say. But the people who do think like this, who do say the things that are so hateful, they have to be called on that. Now, a series of Democratic lawmakers and political columnists have pointed to the various trends, the heckling, gun-toting. You know about this? Protesters display guns at venues where the president is speaking. What's that all about? They bring guns to the talks, to the speeches. It's just so weird. I mean, yeah, they say they're demonstrating their right to carry arms. Okay, why exactly do you feel the need to do that whenever the president is around? Why do you feel the need to wave guns in his presence? You know, it can be sort of read in a negative way, in a threatening way. You have to be really thick not to see that. And of course, you have the whole movement saying the president's birth certificate is forged. You've got people in Congress yelling at him that he's a liar. Well, preachers leading congregations in prayers that Obama will die. Columnist Colbert King in the Washington Post said there's something loose in the land, an ugliness and hatred directed toward Barack Obama, the nation's first African-American president, that takes the breath away. According to Maureen Dowd, New York Times columnist, this president is the ultimate civil rights figure, a black man whose legitimacy is constantly challenged by a loco fringe. Searching for the root of angry outbursts by white middle-aged to elderly Americans at lawmakers' town hall meetings on health care reform over the summer, Democratic Congressman Charles Rangel also pointed to racism. Some Americans have not gotten over the fact that Obama is president of the United States. They go to sleep wondering, how did this happen? And other black Democratic lawmakers have concurred. But to Obama opponents, whenever a Democrat cries racist, it is nothing more than a political ploy to muffle dissent. It is an intimidation tactic. When you make that attack and call someone racist or homophobic, it is a way to kind of silence them, said Brendan Steinhauser, grassroots coordinator for FreedomWorks, which organized the first large-scale protest against Obama in Washington over the weekend. You see that? That protest that took place on Saturday in Washington, D.C., and to call it grassroots, you know, I don't know if it's really grassroots. So much of it was sponsored by various lobbyists and corporations and, again, the radio talk show hosts and things like that. The word grassroots, they call it astroturfing because it's fake grassroots. You know, it's kind of clever, actually. But regardless, there are lots of people who do disagree, and they have that right, and they should not be maligned or discouraged. And there are many, many people who disagree and are not racist and are not saying these hateful things. But we cannot forget that there are so many who are. And it would be nice if the people who genuinely do disagree with policies would call those people on it and tell them how vile they are. But, you know, like we saw today in the House of Representatives, it only goes up to a point. Then they'll simply stand behind and back each other up. Very sad. Okay. As long as we're talking about backwards thinking, and it's such an incredible story, though. Watching this whole thing happen, watching it unfold. Seeing the guy, seeing how he reacted to being called out on this, seeing how he's refusing to take any more responsibility, seeing how people are supporting him. It's not surprising. This is a state that still flies a Confederate flag, for God's sake. And there are people who say, well, that's not offensive. What's offensive about that? You know, I mean, how thick can you possibly be to not see these things, to not understand when Certain things obviously are interpreted in a negative way. Confederate flags, waving guns at rallies, you know, heckling during speeches when you're an elected official. You know, things that used to be obvious. Somehow, we don't see them anymore. Anyway, here's something that's really... I saw this, and it was just almost too much to handle. There's this movie coming out called Creation. If you haven't heard about it yet, you will. Creation. This is a British film. It's about Charles Darwin. Yeah. Get this. They cannot find a distributor for the United States because his theory of evolution is too controversial for American audiences. The theory of evolution is too controversial for American audiences. First of all, I don't know what American audiences they're polling, but it's clearly skewed away from the intelligent American audiences, of which there are many. And okay, so maybe this thing won't play in certain backwoods areas where people still believe that we were, well, however the fairy tale goes. If they believe in that, fine, let them believe in that. But let's not dictate that to people who don't believe it. Anyway, Creation stars Paul Bettany. Details Darwin's struggle between faith and reason, as he wrote on The Origin of Species. It depicts him as a man who loses faith in God following the death of his beloved 10-year-old daughter, Annie. And the film was chosen to open the Toronto Film Festival and had its British premiere on Sunday. It's been sold in almost every territory around the world, from Australia to Scandinavia. However, U.S. distributors have resolutely passed on a film which will prove highly divisive in a country where, according to a Gallup poll, and this is another thing that really blew me away, this was conducted, what year do you think it was conducted? Well, I'll tell you the results first. Only 39% of Americans believe in the theory of evolution. 39%. How long ago do you think that was? The 20s? The 40s? The 60s? Try February of this year. 39% of Americans believe in the theory of evolution. Yeah. MovieGuide.org, which is an influential site which reviews films from a Christian perspective, described Darwin as the father of eugenics and denounced him as a racist, a bigot, and an 1800s naturalist whose legacy is mass murder. Ouch. His half-baked theory directly influenced Adolf Hitler and led to atrocities, crimes against humanity, cloning, and genetic engineering. Oh, yeah. Well, I guess if you compare him to God, then, yeah, he's probably going to come up a little short. The film has sparked fierce debate on U.S. Christian websites, with a typical comment dismissing evolution as a silly theory, with a serious lack of evidence to support it despite over a century of trying. Yeah. Jeremy Thomas, the Oscar-winning producer of Creation, said he was astonished that such attitudes exist 150 years after On the Origin of Species was published. That's what we're up against in 2009. It's amazing, he said. The film has no distributor in America. It has got a deal everywhere else in the world but in the U.S., and it's because of what the film is about. People have been saying this is the best film they've seen all year, yet nobody in the U.S. has picked it up. Can we pick it up? Is it possible? I mean, what does it take to pick up a film? I'll chip in. I mean, there's something broken with the system where something like this can happen. There really is. Continuing with this quote, it is unbelievable to us that this is still a really hot potato in America. There's still a great belief that he, capital H, made the world in 6 days. It's quite difficult for we in the UK to... Is that grammatically correct? Should it be us in the UK? Well, it's quite difficult for we in the UK to imagine religion in America. Can we check on that? All right. It's just, you know, I hate when they get things like that wrong. To imagine religion in America, because they invented the language, too, in England. It's important. We live in a country which is no longer so religious, but in the U.S., outside of New York and L.A., religion rules. And I guess if you've taken a trip across the country, you believe that. It's true. It doesn't mean, though, that everybody is sucked into it. I've met so many people from the most backwood areas of the country who are more enlightened than people I meet in New York or overseas. People who really get it. And I guess the reason is because they really have to stay sane. And I got to tell you, there's nothing more inspiring than seeing a beam of light coming out of darkness. And there are so many of them. So, you know, it's for people like that that we can't turn our backs and just write everybody off as backwoods idiots, because they're not. And even those people that we do write off as idiots, there is still hope for them. They can still be saved. Especially if they're exposed to things like this. Anyway, Charles Darwin is, I suppose, the hero of the film. But we tried to make the film in a very even-handed way. Darwin wasn't saying, kill all religion. He never said such a thing. But he is a totem for people. Now, Creation was developed by BBC Films and the UK Film Council. And it stars Bettany's real-life wife, Jennifer Connelly, as Darwin's deeply religious wife, Emma. It is based on the book Annie's Box by Darwin's great-great-grandson, Randall Keynes, and portrays the naturalist as a family man tormented by the death in 1851 of Annie, his favorite child. She is played in the film by 10-year-old newcomer Martha West, the daughter of The Wire star Dominic West. Yeah, The Wire being the best TV show ever made in any country. And yeah, it came from America. It's also Obama's favorite show. Wow, who would have thought? Anyway, continuing back, getting back to Darwin. Early reviews have raved about the film. The Hollywood Reporter said it would be a great shame if those with religious convictions spurn the film out of hand, as they will find it even-handed and wise. Yeah, you know, open your minds, people. Everybody needs to open their minds to alternative thoughts. And I include people who devoutly believe in the theory of evolution. At least listen to what people say. Understand their perspective. You may not agree with the conclusions, but maybe you can see how they got there. It's important not to simply write people off and dismiss them and not listen to them. And in this particular case, not having this film be distributed in this country, it's basically like banning it. It's saying that this film will not be seen in this country because we can't deal with all the backlash we're going to get. Yeah, it's not a government saying you shall not see this, but it is basically the forces of ignorance preventing something from being seen or witnessed. And, you know, this made me realize, along with so many other things over time, how broken the system is, because how many times have we heard of a really, really good television program that was canceled because it just wasn't getting good ratings? But we knew it was a good program. We knew it was something worth saving. Or you see how a particular show is ruined by all kinds of notes from the network, by all kinds of demographic figures and statistics, by trying to make everybody in the country happy and trying to appeal to values that you weren't really about in the first place. And I'm talking about things like injecting more romance into something that really isn't about romance in the first place, or making happy endings when a sad ending is what the story calls for. You know, that kind of ignorance, that kind of trying to get the highest possible rating and make the farmer in Ohio and the city dweller in New York and the cowboy in Texas make everybody happy and want to tune into this program. It's wrong. It's broken. That's not how the system should work. That's not how people are. People are different. You can't make everybody happy. What would be so bad with having more of a regional system? A system where, say, there were programs meant for New York audiences, or maybe the Northeast, and you would have all kinds of references that the people in that particular part of the country would get, would understand, would appreciate. But somebody in Iowa, perhaps, they might not get it. Maybe they would, but they probably wouldn't. Think of the freedom you could have then. Think of what you could do. You wouldn't have to worry about how this person in 1,000 miles away was not going to understand the premises or would be offended by something in the program in an episode. Oh, sure, you'd still have people that wouldn't like the program, but at least you'd have more of a chance of reaching people with certain common values, if only geographically or culturally, things that we recognize, people, places, geographic landmarks, things like that. And by the same token, those people in the Midwest or in the South or wherever who are always complaining about how things are too liberal for them, well, they can have their own programs too that would cater to them. And the goal would be to get the best ratings for a much smaller area. It's this whole notion of having the whole country being the audience. I think that's what's broken. I think that's why we get things that are just so woefully bland. We so rarely see things that have quality. Most of the time, it's on pay television because people are willing to pay for this. And I think that's also an indication that the audience is there. Now, I know there's all kinds of economic reasons why this probably won't work as far as expenses and things like that. But you know what? It's art. And in the end, if you really want to do something artistic, you will figure out a way to do it. Whether it's putting on a play or creating a symphony, painting a picture, I don't know. You'll figure out a way if you really want to do it. So I really think that we're moving in the wrong direction by making things more national and less regional. I feel that way about a lot of things, too. Not just television, not just movies, not just cultural things, but also... For instance, I'm not a big fan of fast food chains, but wouldn't it be nice if you only had certain fast food chains in, say, maybe 5 states max? And I realize we're way beyond that now, but imagine if McDonald's was only in, say, we don't want it in the Northeast, Southeast. Yeah, the Southeast can have them, all right? And they just, you'd have to go down there if you wanted that. And yeah, they have that. People do travel for White Castle. People do travel for In-N-Out Burger and things like that. It would be nice if there were more things like that on all levels. 7-Elevens, Home Depots, you know, all the things that everybody knows about because they're every place. What if that wasn't the case? What if there was actually a difference in traveling from, say, Ohio to Indiana? A big difference. Might make life more interesting. Might make people travel more, too. All right. Totally wasn't planning on talking about any of that. I did want to mention the other incidents that took place over the last week. There were actually several. Okay. Joe Wilson was I think, the most important one. Okay. The whole Serena Williams thing. Did you hear about this? Where she basically cursed out a lineswoman for calling a foot fault on it was match point. It was match point. I mean, and she gets called out on that. And of course, it's a stressful situation, but she just went off on her. And she said some threatening things. She said she was going to shove the effing ball down her, basically all kinds of specific threats that, you know, I don't think anybody actually expected her to go and do that. But still, I guess it can shake you up if you hear somebody saying that. But the important thing is millions of other people also heard her saying that. So if... In fact, the ball did wind up stuff down there. They wouldn't have to look far to figure out who did it. So it should be foolish to do it. You know, the point is, yeah, it was a dumb thing to do. It was a stupid thing to do. But let's try to understand. Very stressful situation. People freak out. People do the stupidest things sometimes. This is the point I'm always trying to make. If anything is the theme of what I'm always saying, it's that people do stupid things. And that's why I don't think people should be always carrying guns with them, because they do stupid things. They're always getting into accidents, or they're always losing their temper. And when there's a gun around, it just makes things all the worse. It's got nothing to do with whether you have the right to do it or not. Is it a good idea? Most times, it's not. So, this particular... Yeah, imagine Serena Williams had a gun. Huh? What would happen then? Yeah, or if the lineswoman had a gun, or if some people in the stands did. Could be a whole different story here. Point is, yeah, she should definitely apologize. She should have apologized more, I think. But let's not make this more important than it actually is. I see people calling for a lifetime ban and all kinds of horrible penalties and things like that. She did something stupid. And, you know, I don't think she was quick enough to acknowledge that. But I think she'll get it with enough public pressure. But you do need to forgive people and move on and realize that everyone's just human. Same thing with Kanye West. Boy, what a boneheaded thing that was to do. But you know what? That country singer's going to be just fine. Yeah, she had her little Carrie moment there, you know, where she was the queen of the prom and then all of a sudden somebody threw blood on her and she wasn't anymore. Okay, but I think she'll react better than in that horror movie. So, you know, she's going to have a nice career now. People are going to know her name that never knew it before. And Kanye West, I think, realizes what a jerk he was. And if we believe he realizes this, okay, let's not hold on to this forever. People do stupid things. Oh, here's something amazing, though. I don't know if you follow this story at all. But basically, there was this whole thing in Washington, D.C. on September 11th, last Friday, where for a time it appeared that there was some kind of attack going on or some kind of confrontation going on in the water. And CNN was reporting the story. Radio traffic about a Coast Guard training exercise Friday led to erroneous television news reports that guardsmen had fired on a recreational boat in the Potomac River near where President Obama was remembering the 9/11 attacks. The news reports generated uncertainty, said Vice Admiral John Currier, the Coast Guard Chief of Staff, that prompted federal and D.C. officials to respond anxiously. D.C. police raced to the riverside, and the Federal Aviation Administration temporarily grounded planes at Reagan National Airport. Now, the thing that gets me is CNN is taking all the flack for this, for reporting something that wasn't true. But, you know, I don't get it. I just don't get what it is they did wrong. They heard this scanner traffic, and this is true. They heard people on the scanner, on the Coast Guard frequency, saying things like, let's see if we have some quotes here. Let's see. Vessel, if you don't slow down, stop your vessel, you will be fired upon. And various things like that. And then on top of that, when they went to a particular location, which I imagine was defined in the radio broadcast, they saw boats trying to prevent another boat from going past. And then when they contacted the Coast Guard didn't know what was going on, or claimed they didn't know what was going on, or wouldn't comment on it. And other law enforcement agencies did not know what was going on either. At that point, what do you do? Now, people are saying, well, they should have waited until they got confirmation. Should have waited how long exactly? How long do you wait for the government to say, yeah, it's okay, it's this is how we want you to report the story? No, you go forward and you say, this is what we know so far. We know that this is being said on the Coast Guard frequency. We see these boats moving around, and it looks like there's some kind of confrontation going on. The people in charge don't know what's happening. That's a story. And yeah, it's unfortunate that it was a false story, but I think it was completely correct to move forward at that point in time. Now, if you just hear something on the scanner, you just hear someone saying, I'm going to ram your boat or something like that, that's not a news story right there. But when you couple that with actually seeing Coast Guard vessels engaged in some sort of confrontation, well, yeah, you got something there. And it's funny to see people criticizing CNN and saying this is an example of the liberal media. like this has anything to do with liberal or conservative. It's got nothing to do with that. In fact, Fox News also reported this. That's something they don't mention. But CNN reported the bulk of it, and they had live coverage for quite some time. Now, the question is, why did no other law enforcement agency know about this? The D.C. police racing to the scene? You know, this is something that basically, the Coast Guard is describing as a routine training mission. But it's a routine training mission that nobody else knew about. And when someone found out, they weren't able to verify what was actually going on. They reported shots fired over the radio. Here's another thing. Why do you need to broadcast over a cleared channel, unencrypted radio frequency, something that's not really happening? You know, why not use a frequency that isn't normally used for the Coast Guard so people won't make that mistake? Now, the Coast Guard's not apologizing. They refuse to apologize for this. And the White House has castigated CNN, saying they should have verified the story first. I'd like to know how much more they could verify the story when nobody was telling them anything. So, you know, I don't get the criticism. It's easy to criticize when somebody gets something wrong, but you got to look at how that happened. And see just what could have been done a little bit differently. There's a lot of criticism about it happening on September 11th. You know, that's not the issue. People are like, how could you have a training mission on September 11th? You know, it's just another day like any other day. People do all kinds of things every day of the year. So a training mission can happen at night, it can happen in the daytime, it can happen anytime. The real question is, why weren't people who needed to know about this told about this? Imagine if some other law enforcement agency preemptively decided to charge in. Could have gotten a lot worse. So, yeah, maybe I'm missing something here. Maybe there's something in this story that I'm not seeing, but I just don't get the criticism that CNN is being subjected to. I think they did exactly what they should have done. And it's fascinating that the transcript is up on CNN's website. You can see how the whole thing unfolded. Oh, the Iraqi shoe thrower, he's out of prison, finally. Oh, my God, can you believe that? I mean, how long was the guy in there for? It was incredible. He says he was tortured in jail. He served 9 months, 9 months in prison for throwing a shoe, not even hitting Bush. Now, okay, you might think it's a bit hypocritical for me to say that some guy should be some guy in Congress should be roundly criticized for calling Obama a liar in the middle of a speech, and yet I want somewhat lenient treatment for a guy who actually throws a shoe at another president. Well, first of all, this guy is a citizen. It's a little different. He's not an elected official. Certain things are not really expected of the average person as far as necessarily treating people with respect. I mean, it's nice to treat people with respect. But the other thing is, this is a guy who's in a country that was invaded by this country. I think all bets are off at that point. But yeah, you know, it's a shoe. He threw a shoe at him. It wouldn't have hurt him even if it did hit him. And I think 9 months in prison is a bit much. And especially torture is quite a bit much. After leaving prison, Muntada al-Zaidi went straight to al-Baghdadiya, the TV station he was working for at the news conference where he threw the shoes. Addressing his own news conference, wouldn't it be nice if someone threw a shoe there? Yeah, I just like trouble. He said he had been tortured. The very moment that the Prime Minister, Mr. al-Maliki, was on TV saying he wouldn't rest until he was sure I was sleeping on a comfortable bed, I was being hideously tortured. I was being given electric shocks, being hit with cables and steel rods. I was left handcuffed and immersed in water until dawn in cold weather. I demand that Mr. al-Maliki apologize for concealing the truth. At his news conference, he offered an explanation for his shoe-throwing protest. I'm not a hero, he said, but when I saw the war criminal Bush, I wanted to show my resentment. After 6 years of occupation, this killer came to my country smiling and bragging about victory. When I saw the pictures of the dead, it kept me awake at night. He also addressed objections that journalists should throw questions at presidents and not shoes. If I gave the profession of journalism a bad name, I apologize. And yeah, you know, it's wrong to throw shoes at people, I think. But again, you put yourself in someone's position, and maybe you can understand how the thought process might have worked. Okay. Again, our email address is otw@2600.com if you want to send email to Off the Wall. You know, got a very interesting piece of email, actually. Last week, I read what I thought was an incredible piece of email then, where somebody actually was able to figure out. We did a show from London a few weeks ago. Someone was able to figure out what elevator I was standing on when I recorded a particular announcement saying that there was no smoking anywhere on the underground, the subway system in London. They actually knew what stop, what elevator. I was blown away. Well, guess what? They weren't the only one. Dear Emmanuel, I cannot believe this. I cannot believe this. Yeah, he said it twice. Having listened to your show right now, September 9th, you mentioned James, who had sent in an email regarding your recordings of Tufnell Park rail station in London. I have listened to your show for a good few years now during university, and you have read out two of my emails already. Having just finished university and knowing you were over here, I was determined to meet you while you were in London. I was told that you would be at the 2600 meeting in London that week. However, that night I had to run for a plane to Edinburgh as I was going up to some of the distilleries and to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. I was shocked to learn that after I had come back, you had also made your way up there to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. Yeah, incredible. So I had missed you. But when I heard James's letter tonight, my jaw dropped. I had been living in Tufnell Park for the last month and was quite sure that the recording you made sounded familiar, but I thought it was probably just the same recording at many tube stops. It makes me feel that the world is just so small to think that the Emmanuel Goldstein was only a 5-minute walk from where I was living at the time. It makes me smile, but also makes me wish I had hung around the train station more, had I only known. Maybe for the next hope, and that is what it's called, I will be able to get out there and meet you in person. You're a true inspiration to all the hackers out there. Keep up the great work, mate. Signed, Grant. Grant, thanks so much for the kind words. I don't know how deserving they are, but yeah, please make it to the next hope. You'll have a blast. July 16, 17, and 18, 2010, Hotel Pennsylvania, New York City. We'll have more information on that. But yeah, it is a small world, and it's incredible that not one but two listeners were in that region and probably have ridden that elevator many times. Just makes me wonder, you know, if I just pick a random street someplace, are we going to have a listener there as well? Could very well be. Here's another letter. Dear Emmanuel, I'd like to clear up your apparent misunderstanding about homeschooling families. My children are homeschooled, and I, too, initially worried about socialization as we were making the decision to do so. Today, I have no worries about their lack of socialization. In fact, we and most of the homeschooling families we know worry more about our children having too many social opportunities rather than not enough. Homeschool is something of a misnomer. It does not mean the children stay at home with their parents all day, every day. Parents typically take them out for various field trips and events, and often this is done in groups with other homeschoolers. They come in all varieties. Even in my religious and culturally conservative southern state, there is a pagan cover school. As an intelligent person, you, of course, realize that the Garridos are an extreme case where they used homeschool to try to cover up their crimes, referring to the crazy guy out in, was it California, that was imprisoned a girl for 18 years, and horrible story. Anyway, needless to say, they far from represent the average homeschooling family. Signed, one boring person. Well, I doubt that is really what you are, but and I'm sure that there is much good to come out of homeschooling and a lot of hassle that is saved by not going to school. But still, you know, I really think that that whole school experience is important. I think it's important to get away from your family for a period of time. Yes, every day. I think it's important to there is socialization going on. You seem to think there's too much. I don't know. You know, I'm sure every parent thinks there's too much socialization going on with their child. But it's important for the child to reach that determination or to find friends on their own that aren't necessarily screened by parents. I mean, this is why every kid seems to turn out with the same religious beliefs and the same political beliefs up to a certain point in their lives. It's not because they got there independently, it's because they're coerced, whether in a good way or a bad way. And I just think it would mean so much more if people got there on their own by examining the different ways of life, the different people. And you can really only get that by mixing it up a bit, by going out in the world and exploring. And yeah, you know, even as a child, to a degree, we want to protect our kids, but sometimes we overdo it. All right, but interesting letter, interesting thoughts. And unfortunately, we're out of time because I babbled the entire hour. There was just so much to talk about, though. So much to talk about. We're going to leave on a sad note. One of my favorite people is gone. And I'm not going to play the song that the guy had as a hit in his heyday. I'm talking about Jim Carroll, of course, who the Basketball Diaries was based on, and who had the hit song, People Who Died. Yes, I know, I get it. He's a person who died now, and that song will always have a different meaning. So let's play something else. And this song also has a different meaning now, too, because it's called It's Too Late, and the very first line, in fact, addresses his future mortality. Yeah. Again, write to us, otw@2600.com. Here's Jim Carroll. We'll see you next week. Good night.
It's too late to fall in love with Sharon Tate, but it's too soon to ask me for the words I want called on my tomb. I think it's time that y'all start to think about getting by without that need to go out and find somebody to love. It's too late, there's no one left want to imitate. You see, you just don't know. I'm here to give you my heart, and you want some fashion show. But it ain't no contribution to rely on the institution to validate your chosen art and to sanction your boredom and let you play out your part. They got nothing to give, they always part their legs for what's negative. Hey, they're so decadent until their daddy's money from home's all spent. So I think it's time, cause it's too easy to rely on worshiping devils and strangers in bed. Though they do get good drugs and they do give good pets. It's too late, you should have realized I was worth the wait. Ah, but you didn't hesitate, and when he took you off, you let him seal our fate. So I think it's time that you all start to think about getting by without that need to go out and find.